Welcome to Natural Education, a blog from the Natural Education Alliance. I'm Jazz.
I'm Heather.
And we are sitting down today to talk about natural education and what natural education is. You know, just by the very fact that we're sitting down to have this conversation, we're saying that there's something unnatural about the way that our society teaches children. There's something about it that goes against the grain of the child's nature. And what natural education is and what it means to us all really depends on our own experience and our own worldview.
Our own children.
And it depends on our own children. That's so right. So let's just introduce ourselves briefly and talk a little bit about our education, what was natural and unnatural about it, and how we find ourselves here today. I grew up in the Waldorf school movement. My parents came to it when I was about 4 or 5. They ran a Waldorf playgroup at our home in Virginia, and then we moved to California for my dad to do teacher training at Rudolf Steiner College. And my memory of my education is one of really being outside. In Sacramento, we would go for walks along the American River. We would look for driftwood. We would look for special stones. We would visit the sheep. The third graders would get to learn to milk them, but I left before that. And at the Austin Waldorf School, the whole campus was set up as a series of rooms that with boardwalks interlocking them. And we were outside gardening my class built a gazebo for our third grade building project, and we had blacksmithing and sculpture and eurythmy, and it was just an artistically saturated and nature-saturated education. And it wasn't always maybe what was natural for me. There was definitely part of me that sort of longed for worksheets. I remember in second grade when I learned that you can add up a number that's infinitely long, it doesn't matter, just like writing out numbers as long as the paper would let me and adding them up and subtracting them, and I called it my homework. We didn't really have tests. We would have a weekly spelling quiz starting in maybe fourth grade. We had projects a couple times a year, but you know, the SAT was one of the first tests that I took, and I loved it. It was just so much fun to fill in all the bubbles, and you know, I felt so, I don't know, so official. So tell me a little bit about your education, Heather.
Polar opposite over here. So I started schooling, and I was actually in the public school system from kindergarten to about fourth grade. My mom, being a middle school teacher at the time, decided as I was getting closer to middle school that that was not what they wanted for their family. So she pulled me out of public school system and started homeschooling. I was the child who struggled. I had gotten very used to being in a group of 20, 30, 40 other students, depending on what we were doing. And that was my routine. That was just how it was. And that's really all the memories I have between that and walking in lines. Then when we started homeschooling, you know, my mother's experience at the time being educated and taught in a public school setting, it was very much, here was my desk, here was her desk, here was the lesson plan for the week. And for a while, it looked very similar to a mainstream classroom, just with one teacher and one student. However, once my own mother fell into her natural homeschool rhythm, yes, there was a curriculum, but maybe we would dive a little bit deeper, allowing me to explore. And, you know, so that was one of our joys. And we had homeschool groups, and coming from a public school system, I still longed for that, being in a large group of students, and kind of needed that girlfriend community aspects. My mom got connected with some of the ladies in our homeschool group that were starting a hybrid program, where you would go to school 2 days a week, and then on the other 3 days you would be home doing your home lessons. Right at the time where I was longing for something different. Now, you know, looking at it from my own perspective as a mother, you follow what your child was needing, and that's what my parents did.
So Heather, you started Lazur Learning Village. How did that happen? What was that moment when you decided we're going to make something?
I tell everyone this because it is the truth. It was a 2 a.m. aha moment. A girlfriend and I were talking, and it all started because I came across a Craigslist post of Montessori materials for a homeschool style environment. And I knew that for my life situation, I probably wasn't ever going to really be a homeschool mom, but there were still very many aspects of homeschooling that were ideal for myself and what I envisioned for my son's education. So it started with a random post of saying, hey, this is awesome. Who wants to go in with me? And let's get these materials because these are wonderful. We do Montessori at home for my son. And does someone essentially want to homeschool my son with these materials, but it not be me? And at 2 a.m. on a Facebook post, I mean, 20, 30 more comments were coming in from other moms. And next thing we know, it's like this crazy thread of everyone up at late hours because we're all nursing or rocking a baby back to sleep or something. And I see that there's other moms who have the same idea, the same vision, the same desire to maybe want to homeschool, but for some reason in life they can't. Or want the certain aspects of homeschooling, but they're kind of afraid to take that plunge.
And Lazur Learning Village was born. Our program is newer. We're in our inaugural year. We're called The Garden, which is a sort of a cliched name for a Waldorf program, but there it is. I think that it's something that I always knew we would be part of. My parents are Waldorf teachers. They have a consultancy, Threefold Consulting, and they consult with Waldorf schools all around the world and with homeschool groups and Waldorf co-ops and things like that. And so it just always seemed like a possibility. This is something that people do. And then we moved to Marietta, which is, you know, at least an hour away from the nearest Waldorf school, and yet has this really rich history of Waldorf homeschoolers. And we were lucky enough to connect almost as soon as we moved here with this really wonderful group of Waldorf homeschoolers who met weekly. But my daughter needs more than once a week. She learns best in a group. She really values that sort of collaborative environment. And so as wonderful as the group was, at the end of the day, it was just not really honoring her needs. And then also for myself, I think that I'm a better teacher in a group of children. I'm a very practical-minded person, and there's something that seems just inefficient about teaching one child, especially when there are so many children out there whose education is doing them more harm than good. I have a lot of respect for homeschoolers and homeschooling teachers, but just think about the opportunity cost and what could be possible if those teachers were teaching classes of 20 or 30 students instead of one or two. So we are working on building a full-scale Waldorf school, and it's going to be a long journey, and we're prepared to relish the journey. So right now we have a forest kindergarten, and we have some subject classes for first through fifth graders, and it's really beautiful. I feel so blessed to be part of it. So one of the things that I'm really excited about is this attitude that we share of sort of the more the merrier when it comes to natural education initiatives. You and I are both committed to creating a welcoming, non-competitive culture in the area. And the reason that we're putting this whole project together is to help other programs, help existing programs connect with families, help families connect with the right program for them. And that might be Heather's program, that might be my program, that might be a totally different program. And that's wonderful. We support any of those options. But you know, it's not always clear to families how to find the right program for their children.
I think on a parent side, the most difficult part, especially in our area, is a lot of these alternative educational programs are by word of mouth. And so if you're not in that right initial circle friend group, you might only see the larger schools in our area that have the funds and have the resources to make their name known. And you go, oh, well, that's just maybe financially not attainable for us. And yet there are other programs probably closer to you than you realize, but they're just smaller. And so part of our goal is to assist them, make our alliance a group that families know to go directly to us to look for something. And then they can find the resources. They can see what type of program works best for their child and then find those hidden gems in their community.
So we've used the words natural education a lot.
You'll hear it a lot more.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means. You know, the term comes from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who wrote Natural Education for Natural Man in the 18th century. Rousseau introduced this dichotomy between the ideas that children are inherently bad and it's the role of society to correct them, and that adults who are bad are a result of children who were insufficiently socialized, insufficiently exposed to society, where they're still too much in the grips of their natural antisocial origins. Then, you know, there's also this idea that children are inherently good and inherently complete, and that adults who fall short of that have been corrupted by society, that they were children who were good and pure, and something happened along the way that changed that. And it's these two fundamentally different ways of seeing what a child is, and for us to examine for ourselves which of those resonate more strongly is helpful in figuring out what the role of education is, because those present two profoundly different responses of what society should do. And natural education is premised on this idea that just like inside an acorn is that complete and healthy oak tree, inside every child is a mature and intelligent and a productive adult. And what society needs to do, what education needs to do for the child, is to get out of their way and to protect that unfolding and to give them the nurturing that they need along the way, certainly, but it's not our job to create them. Mm-hmm. My parents like to say that some parents are artists who see their child as a blank canvas that they will create a piece of art on. And some parents are gardeners who see their children as seedlings that they will, you know, water and protect from the wind and maybe a little bit of judicious pruning here and there, but basically just protect the space for them to grow. And that's actually why we named our program The Garden, was to support that idea that children already have everything they need somewhere deep down inside of them, and that our job as educators is to facilitate that unfolding. Mm-hmm. So for Rousseau, natural education meant exploration and experimentation and firsthand knowledge, and that that is always better than knowledge that's handed down from a third party. And there are a lot of different approaches to natural education today, and some of those, you know, mitigate that more than others. Shall we talk about some of the different examples of movements that we're including under this heading? You know, certainly there are a lot of programs that don't label their philosophy, but labels can be helpful when we're talking about what we believe and how we educate our children.
Right.
At The Garden, our approach is explicitly Waldorf, but you at Lazur have a mixture of philosophies that you incorporate. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that blending process works?
We look at Lazur as a village, that we're blending different philosophies together. Now, while we do pull heavier from Montessori, Waldorf, and Reggio, we do pull from the big three. We also look very much at each individual child and take into consideration, what are these child's interests? How does this child blossom? We look at exactly what are they longing for. Is it maybe a sensorial activity? Maybe is it a nature-based activity? Is it an activity where they're going to sit and just color as they're listening to the story being told? Is it maybe learning and talking about things through verses and songs and dances? And
so you talk about the big three. You and I were talking about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, and the only other school movement that I could think to add to them was the Sudbury schools, which are democratic schools. It's basically a bunch of unschoolers together. It's entirely child-led, and the schools are run by the students. It's a really neat movement, but when we talk about numbers, there are about 4,000 Montessori schools in the United States. Montessori is a very broadly interpreted method. There are a couple of different accrediting organizations, but the name can be used and applied by anyone who wants to use it.
The name was not trademarked or anything like that. And then without having a very clear guidelines on this is the official way to do it at all times, people do take Montessori and interpret it.
And so anyone who's inspired by Montessori can call their program a Montessori program, and there are about 4,000 of them in the United States. In contrast, there are only about 150 Waldorf schools in the United States. Waldorf, as a trademark, is very closely pinned down by the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America. And there are about 57 Reggio-inspired schools in the United States, and that is Reggio-inspired. The only Reggio Emilia schools are located in the town of Reggio Emilia.
And they do not have, to my knowledge, a formal training institution like Montessori and Waldorf do.
And there are 30 Sudbury schools. So that's like a whole order of magnitude of difference. And Montessori is obviously the behemoth on the block when we talk about natural education. And yet, Montessori isn't necessarily natural. It's not natural for every child. It's not always natural in the way that it's implemented. I love a lot of things about Montessori, but there was this great example once when my daughter was visiting a Montessori school and she was sorting the vegetable cutting activity instead of vegetable cutting it. And she was told, no, that's wrong. That's not how to play with this. And, you know, she was 4 years old at the time. And I think that Montessori often ends up in this sort of rigidity that can be comforting for some children.
Right. And because there is such a wide base of interpretation for how a Montessori activity or manipulative should be used, you do see a broad variation. And that's why even if you do feel Montessori is right for your child, you have to be very specific about what type of program you're moving into. One Montessori program might not be the best for your, quote, Montessori child, whereas another might be ideal and perfect. That's one of the reasons you do have so many Montessori schools to choose from.
Yeah, it's a combination of the interpretation and the lack of a formal arbiter, because I think there are just as many people who are like, well, this is how we're interpreting Waldorf. This is how we're interpreting Waldorf. But then there's Osna, who comes in and says, okay, cool. That's not Waldorf. You cannot call your program Waldorf.
I think with any of the traditional natural education programs, I think the biggest thing to take in consideration as a parent is to look at what are the teachers and the directors' approaches to the child themselves. Because that's what's going to depict if this is a natural-based education program or is this just a program that's kind of, you know, going through the mill of what they are told to do.
Because then that's no longer natural education. Natural education requires that we clearly see the child in front of us. You can read as much as you want to, and, you know, you and I have both read broadly, but at the end of the day, it all boils down to who the individual child is. That's the heart of natural education, is seeing that child. And then also being willing to see them differently on different days and at different ages. 4-year-olds don't learn the way that 8-year-olds do, and 8-year-olds don't learn the way that 14-year-olds do. And it's really foolish to try to teach them all in the same environment with the same tools. There are just different things that they need from us depending on their physical, emotional, psychological, developmental stages. Instead of just creating some sort of a natural education mill that you put the children through.
For us at Lazor, that was our biggest thing, is there were so many aspects of all of these different philosophies that we loved, and at different times they work great for all the children. But there are times where it doesn't always work. And maybe, you know, 1 week or 1 month, the Montessori number rods was the exact way that one of the children needed to start figuring out counting. But then a little bit later, they just want to sit and sort things and count things. And if we told them, no, you can't do that, how are we fulfilling that need that they need to sit and sort and count? How are we fulfilling what their natural desire is telling them to do, that this is how I need to process something, this is how I need to learn something? If we're not offering those in different ways and accepting that a child's going to need to work in a different manner versus just this is the one way to do it, we are no longer serving the child.
It becomes disrespectful of the child. One of the interesting things that you had brought up in a previous conversation was this idea of looking at the often profound differences between Montessori and Waldorf as symptoms of their culture and environment.
Oh, yes. The more the history. For me, that was kind of the eye-opener. And I started reading a little bit more about the history. And it was really amazing when you look at what both creators were looking at to serve the needs of the children in their time frame and in their era and in their communities. So Dr. Montessori, her basis was these children are surrounded daily with beautiful masterpieces. They're surrounded by this. And so for them, they needed more of this hands-on, everyday, daily work. That's what the children were needing to be exposed to the most. And then you look at what Steiner was looking at. He was looking at children who were, you know, their parents are working more in the factories. It's an urban environment. They're not exposed to as much nature. They're not as exposed to as much artwork and literature and things like that. So what his desire was to bring that to the children. So both of them looked at what is the daily life of our children lacking. Okay, we're going to bring that to them. And so it's so interesting when you think about that. They just looked at what's lacking in the child's life. That's what we're going to stress when we bring to the child. instead of putting them through a little bit of a millwork. They're exposed to these elements already. So what can we do to kind of counteract what they're being exposed to, or maybe enhance what they need along with what they're being exposed to?
And thinking about that is so important, again, for seeing the children that we have before us. Because thinking about sort of the mindset and the sample set of who those children were and how our children differ. And we can draw some fairly logical lines from how our children's environments differ to how their education should
be. Yeah, the home life. And this was something when you were talking about earlier about how a parent's job is to protect that seedling of a child. What you do see a lot of with natural education families is that they are bringing part of this philosophy into their own homes. It's not something that stays at school. A lot of times it's in the home as well. And that also might be what draws a family to one specific philosophy over another, is what's the intuition in our family? What does our family life look like? Are we more drawn to the Waldorf because of certain aspects of our home life? Or, you know, I know for me personally, one of the first draws for Montessori for us was I knew that in our family situation, like, I want to be there for my son at all times, but I kind of need him to learn how to have a certain level of independence. That was very important, just the way that our family dynamics worked out. And so for me, that's what drew me initially to Montessori, was that in a loving and gentle way, nurtured that sense of independence that he needed. Not that I was trying to separate my son and myself, but he needed a very loving way to be like, you are your own self. I'm going to help you come into that self. I'm going to give you the tools you need. I'm going to maybe bring things down to your size.
You know, it is unrealistic to expect a 3-year-old to function like an adult, but it's not only respectful of the family's needs, but also of the child's personhood. To, you know, install a coat rack at their level and build in that habit and that responsibility and that expectation that they will hang up their own coat and pull it down and teach them how to put it on and maybe even zip it up.
Small steps here. But yeah, so every family has that element in their household. And so that's what also draws them towards these natural education programs.
And that's one of the reasons that it's so important to me and Heather to find ways to promote and support these initiatives that are out there and to help every family connect with the program that's right for them and that can give their child the environment and the care that they need to develop into their best and truest self.
That's one of the things I love about what both of our programs are striving to do, is to be not only a program that nurtures this family dynamic, but also to be more attainable. Because I know one of the biggest things you see in some of our local areas is that there's these wonderful programs, but they're financially unattainable for some families, no matter the desire of that family. And so both of our programs strive to meet that family's needs, to help them come to a point where they can afford the program or make our program manageable so that it is affordable. What we like to do is also help other programs find resources so that they can be financially attainable for different families who have this desire, but they just can't afford it.
So we'd like to close with a request. If you're listening to this and you know of a local program, it can be a co-op, an in-home program, something in a church basement, or a full-fledged brick-and-mortar school, anything that people should know about, come to our website or comment on our Facebook page. Let us know about this program. We're building a directory right now, and we need your help to make sure we're including all of these programs.
And we'll leave you with this thought from William Butler Yeats. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.
Our podcast is over, and we've done our best. We thank you for listening, and have a nice rest.